His name was Aseman, and he was a member of a group of contemporary Asiatic three-brained beings who had recognized their slavish dependence upon certain causes within them and had organized a collective existence for working on themselves to become free from this inner slavery. It's interesting to note that this group of terrestrial three-brained beings, one of whom was this brother Aseman, had first existed in the country formerly called Pearllandia, and now called India. But when beings from the continent of Europe appeared there and began disturbing them and hindering their peaceful work, they all migrated across what are now called the Himalayan Mountains and settled partly in the country of Tibet and partly in what are called the valleys of the Hindu Kush. Brother Aseman was one of the group that had settled in the valleys of the Hindu Kush. As time was precious to the members of this brotherhood, who were working for their self-perfection, and the process of eating robbed them of a great deal of time, Brother Aseman, being well versed in the science then called alchemy, set to work very earnestly in the hope of finding what is called a chemical preparation, the introduction of which into himself would make it possible for a being to exist without spending so many hours in preparing and consuming all sorts of products for his first being food. After long and intensive work, Brother Aseman found, for this purpose, a combination of chemical substances in the form of a powder, one small thimbleful of which, taken once every 24 hours, enabled a being to exist without consuming anything else but water and to fulfill satisfactorily all his being obligations. When I chanced to visit this monastery where Brother Aseman existed with the other brethren of that small group of your contemporary favorites, they had all been using this preparation for 5 months. And Brother Aseman, with the help of some of the other brethren who were also very familiar with this substance, was intensely busy with experiments, this time on a large scale. And these experiments showed them that in the long run, even this preparation could not suffice for normal being existence. After they had verified this, they not only entirely ceased using this powder, but even destroyed the very formula for preparing it that Brother Aseman had found. Several months later, I happened to return to that monastery and to acquaint myself with a document these brothers had composed on the very day that they ceased once and for all to use this astonishing preparation. This document contained, among other things, several very interesting details about the action produced by Aseman's preparation. It stated that when this preparation was introduced into the presence of a being, in addition to its nutritive property, this substance had a particular effect upon what are called the wandering nerves of the stomach, which was that not only did the need for food immediately cease in beings, but the desire to consume any edible product whatsoever also entirely disappeared. And if one of them was obliged to swallow something, it took a long time for the resulting disagreeable state to pass. This document also said that at first, no change had been noticed in the presence of the beings who took this preparation for their nourishment. Even their weight did not diminish. It was only after 5 months that its harmful effect became evident to the common presence of the beings by the progressive weakening of the power and sensitivity of their perceptive organs and certain of their manifestations. For example, their voices grew weaker and their sight, hearing, and so on, got worse. Furthermore, in certain of them preceding the derangement of their being functions, changes were observed in their general psychic state. The document composed by these brethren, gave a lengthy description of the changes of character in the beings after they had used this Asiman's remarkable preparation for 5 months. And by way of illustration, some excellent and apt comparisons were included. Although none of the specific examples that recited in this document have remained in my memory, the flavor of them, which I have retained, will enable me to give you their purport by employing once again the language of our respected Mullah Nasruddin. For example, a brother with the character of one of God's angels, as they say, would suddenly become as irritable as someone of whom our dear Mullah Nasruddin once said, "He is as testy as a man who has just undergone the full treatment by a famous European nerve specialist." Or again, beings who one day were placid as the little butter lambs that the pious place on the festal board at their most important religious feasts would on the next day get as exasperated as a German professor when some French professor discovers something new in contemporary science. Or again, a being whose love was like that of a contemporary terrestrial suitor for a rich widow, of course, before he has received a single penny from her, would turn just as spiteful as one of those venomous persons who, foaming at the mouth, will hate that poor author who is now writing about you and me in his book entitled An Objectively Impartial Criticism of the Life of Man. This poor upstart author, by the way, will be hated by the full-blooded materialists and by the 96-carat deists, and even by those of the three-brain beings who have taken your fancy, who, as long as their stomachs are full and their mistresses are making no scenes, are incorrigible optimists, but who, on the contrary, when their stomachs are empty, become hopeless pessimists. Now, my boy, that we have mentioned this queer upstart writer, there's nothing for it but to inform you here that something about him has perplexed me for a long time, which, moreover, it continues to do so. And that is a certain naivete of his. I must tell you that from the very beginning of his responsible existence, he also became, whether by accident or by the will of fate, I do not know, a follower, and in fact a very devout follower of our wise and esteemed Mullah Nasruddin, and that furthermore, in the ordinary process of his being existence, he has never missed the slightest opportunity to act according to the unprecedentedly wise and inimitable sayings of our revered teacher. But now, according to the information that has reached me by etherogram, all of a sudden he appears to be constantly violating one of the most serious and practical counsels, certainly not accessible to everybody, which this teacher, above all teachers, formulated thus. "Ech, poor friend, here on the earth, if you tell the truth, you're a big fool. Whereas, if you play the hypocrite, you are only a scoundrel, though also a big one. So better do nothing, and just recline on your couch, and learn how to sing like the sparrow that has not yet been turned into an American canary."